Nothing personal.
All right.
I'll take that.
Okay, I'm opening the meeting of the House Education Committee for Monday, February 5th, 2018. And so first of all, I'd like to open up an organizational meeting and have an adoption of the committee rules. So, Representative Wilson.
Sure. Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 5, 2018.
Okay. Representative Wilson moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 5th, 2018. Is there any discussion? These are committee rules that basically every committee has, and so if you had a committee before this, you knew what they were. Okay, is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk would call the roll, please.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Solomon?
Aye.
Representative Springer?
Excused.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez?
Excused.
Vice Chair Wilson?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay. So with that, the motion passes and the rules are adopted. Okay, so I close the work session on the organizational meeting and I open. Okay, and then committee introductions. Do we need any new introductions?
Say our names.
Yeah, just if you just want to, for the new session, just say your names, where you're from.
I'm Representative Solomon, and I represent the area House District 30, which is Banks, Helvetia, North Plains, Hillsborough, and a little bit of Beaverton.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. Proud to represent the city of Redmond and the community of Sun River and parts of Bend. I represent Tumalo, parts of Bend, and parts of Deschutes County.
I'm Representative Paul Evans. I represent House District 20, Monmouth Independence, West Salem, South Salem, and because he's not here right now, Independence, which is the real home of the Oregon Trail.
All right. Hi, Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass, most of Josephine County.
Hey, Margaret Doherty, House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland. And it is not part of the Oregon Trail, but Capitol Highway, which is spelled C-A-P-I-T-O-L, initially was the way from Portland to Salem back in the olden days. At least that's what the plaque says.
Thank you. Sherry Springer, House District 17. From SIO, I represent the east parts of Lynn and Marion County and 11 cities.
I have to get the script. My name is Susan McLean, and I'm the representative of House District 29, and I've been a teacher for 42-plus years, and it's the passion of my life.
Okay. And then Alethea, our committee administrator.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Alethea Miller. I'm the analyst for the House Committee on Education, and then the assistant.
Okay.
And the assistant.
And then our assistant. That's Matt. If you don't want to introduce yourself, please go ahead.
I'm Matt Perot. I am the committee assistant for the House Education Committee.
And are you?
Corey Rosenberg, also assistant.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so with that, we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4036. Representative McLean, Mike McLean. And if you could just go through and give us a little summary of it, please.
Yeah. Majority members of the committee, House Bill 4036 allows school districts to allow homeschooled students and public charter school students to participate in interscholastic activities regardless of the affiliation with any voluntary associations. It also clarifies the current interpretation and practice of fees and effective on July 1st, 2018. A revenue statement has been issued as no revenue impact and a fiscal impact as no fiscal impact, and there are no subsequent referrals.
Okay, thank you. Representative McLean.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the Education Committee. I chief sponsored House Bill 4036 to clarify what was previously passed and signed into law by our governor in Senate Bill 208. Senate Bill 208 is law. And so we're not here to debate what is existing Oregon law. Senate Bill 208 had a phrase in it, which, in essence, it said, look, if you're a part of a charter school, public charter school, or a homeschool, that NEON kids are not going to be barred from entering the schoolhouse door in a discrimination that embarrasses our state. The discrimination occurred because children who have different learning needs and families that chose an education environment for those children of a charter school or perhaps a homeschool. These children, some of them, I'm not all school districts did this, but some of our school districts told these children, because you were not enrolled in this traditional public school, you were not allowed to play sports here. You were not allowed to have the same advantages of other school children in Oregon. That form of discrimination was wrong. I'm proud of our legislature and our governor for standing up for all the Oregon school kids and saying, you will not be discriminated against when it comes to sports or extracurricular activities. It defined interscholastic activities as, quote, athletics, music, speech, and other similar or related activities. You have in the record before this committee an article that headlines, the title says, charter student not allowed to join choir at Beaverton Elementary School. This came out September 21, 2017, after we passed Senate Bill 208. And it goes on and it says, this mom reached out to Oak Hills Elementary about Ben Mashuka, who's age 9, joining joining choir. The school staff informed her that Ben wouldn't be able to join because of his status as a charter school student. And while the staff was understanding and apologetic of Ben's situation, they said policy didn't allow it. And I want to quote from Maureen Wheeler, a public communications officer for the school district, this is the Beaverton School District, told KGW that under the bill's, quote, interscholastic activities, which I just quoted from you, are activities governed by Oregon School Activities Association. Choir isn't one of those activities. So let me read you again the definition of interscholastic activities in House Bill 2008. 208. It's defined as, quote, athletics, music, speech, and other similar or related activities. Beaverton School District said, no, the definition is those activities governed by the Oregon School Activities Association. So they excluded a child. They discriminated against a child. And they said, you can't participate in choir. Now, that is changing the definition of Senate Bill 208. So I propose for your consideration House Bill 4036 that says, and it just does one thing and one thing only. It says, interscholastic activity means athletics, music, speech, and other similar or related activities. And then we add this part. Regardless of whether the interscholastic activities are governed by a voluntary association that administers interscholastic activities. That's a fancy way to say, no, music includes choir. Okay, so you may hear today from the School Board Association or maybe some others that want to come up here and say it's okay to discriminate against children. They're going to sit here and they're going to try to justify to you that discrimination is okay. It's not okay.
And these children who are learning in an environment like a charter school or a home school, they're there because their needs dictate their participation there. Now, maybe it's true that there could be a student enrolled somewhere in a charter school that just wants to go to charter school or is homeschooled because this child doesn't necessarily need it, but because the parents want it. I don't know. But I am a father of three children. Two of my children, school was easy. One of them, not so much. He needed a different environment to learn. I didn't love him any less. I didn't have an issue with public schools. I had a child that needed an education, and he needed a charter school environment that was specialized for him. He graduated from high school. He did a great job. Redmond Proficiency Academy, and he was online for a while in the homeschool. We were able to get him, and he did great. I love him. But the thought that he would be discriminated against, participating in sports and choir and et cetera, it's just, I can't imagine that. So maybe I'm waxing on about this a little more than I should because I'm a dad, and it's wrong. And why we're here, because Beaverton said this kid couldn't participate in choir. Look, what I'm not saying is this. I'm not saying that they get the right to do it. I'm just saying you can't discriminate against them because of their school. So if there's only 12 spots on a varsity basketball team and there are 50 young women who want to play basketball, all right, they got to compete. They got to be on a team. There's going to be cuts. They don't get on the team because they're in a charter school. But they're not excluded from trying out just because they're in their charter school. Do you understand the difference? Choir, everything like that. So Beaverton redefined Senate Bill 208. I'm asking this committee to pass this bill, 4036, and make sure that our districts know we meant what we said. Quit blocking the schoolhouse door for our kids for your reasons. All kids get equal access to school, to sports, to choir, etc. And I hope that the School Board Association and the others who for some reason have a problem with this are going to realize that this is not how we do things in Oregon. Quit playing games with our kids. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you for your time.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative McLean, Susan McLean.
I may have this wrong, but you know, if OSAA has a state tournament for that activity, it is governed under that organization that they were talking about. So I'm not sure why they would say it wasn't, because there are state, you know, tournaments for that, and they are governed by OSAA, just like band is and just like speech is. So I didn't understand that part. But the definition that you were given, that you were giving, was just saying, let's dismiss if they're part of any organization. We're just simply saying that if it's an activity like these, then they should be allowed in. Is that correct?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Susan McLean. I don't know why Beaverton School District tried to redefine interscholastic activities. And my hope is that this bill clarifies that choir, or perhaps any activity, even if they don't have a state-sponsored tournament, is included.
Okay, Springer.
Okay, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, as I read the ORS, and we're talking about 399-460, and the language in this bill, I don't see how We are changing the process. We are clarifying the process. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Springer, that is correct.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
So in that, because I'm comparing statute with what we have here, we're not doing anything different. We're maintaining, in lines 11, it talks about the annual fee that a person pays and then the additional. So we're keeping in place the additional fees that charter and homeschool students pay to do this. I just want to be ultra clear, because I don't see the stumbling block in this whatsoever. I see this as clarification of what we already did, a decision we already made.
And maybe one clarification before we have Representative Wilson is that this was not a high school student. This was an elementary school student.
Correct.
And so OSAA does not have elementary competitions and choir. The high school does. So that just as a clarification. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a statement, Representative McLean. I thank you for bringing this forward. We knew what we meant the first time with Senate Bill 208. So sorry we have to go back and clarify that. We shouldn't have to. But anyway, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. McLean. Okay, so next panel is Morgan Allen, Richard Donovan, and Ozzie Rose. Curiosity, do you have a singing voice?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA, and I was only tangentially involved in the bill. And I think part of the issue is there was a rulemaking process, and the State Board defined interscholastic activities as those governed by OSAA. So I think that's part of the issue. And I think part of the challenge on this is we need to work out some of the, depending on who you're talking to from the school districts or the charter advocates or the OSAA, one of our concerns is that people are mixing up extracurricular activities, things that occur before or after school, interscholastic sports or competitions like a sports team or a speech and debate team where you're competing against other schools, and classes, so actually enrolling in the school. And so I think the bill probably just needs a little bit more work to clarify that. So for example, right now, if you're a homeschool student and you want to attend a math or a social studies class in your neighborhood school district, you can do that, enroll, and the school district gets the proportional share of the state school fund. So if they take one, if you have a 6-period day and a kid comes to take a math class, you get 1/6 of an ADMW for your school district. We probably need something similar like that if we're talking about classes. If we're talking about before or after school activities, I think we would probably just need to get some language in there to clarify that it's your neighborhood school. It's not any school you want in the district. You can't sort of pick and choose, you know, if there's 10 middle schools in your district, if you're a large district, and you live in the attendance boundary for one school. You can't just, you know, sort of pick and choose which sports team or which music class you want if there's a bunch of different schools. So I think there's some technical details that we can work out. And, you know, I think I was tangentially involved in the bill last session, but I remember the discussions were part of the reason I think people centered around OSA activities is because there's a governing board. There are rules. Everybody plays by the same rules. You know, as someone who's coached and refereed youth sports, you've probably all met Little League Dad, who can get real upset. You know, there's all these issues about sports and transferring and people, you know, trying to play sports at schools or teams they don't belong to and things like that. So I think with a little bit of work, we could probably work those details out. But from our perspective, I think the bottom line for COSA members is we want to make sure that we're treating all kids similarly. So we already have a process that works for our homeschool students. We should probably mirror that process for the charter school students and make sure that we're not having different rules for charter kids versus homeschool kids versus neighborhood kids. We're not charging different fees or taking different pieces out of the state school fund or, you know, allowing one group of kids to be dual enrolled. I think that's that is the concern we've heard from our folks is classes, because some of our charter colleagues in the rulemaking discussions about Senate Bill 208, when they hear music, like, for example, my daughter's middle school has band as a class, as an elective class, and the language in the statute says music and speech, and I think the intention is if there's like an extracurricular activity, but if we're talking about classes, then that's something completely different, and we need to have a conversation about how that interplays with students being enrolled at multiple schools. For example, would that mean then neighborhood kids, if there was something at the charter school in their school district, could they go take one class at the charter school? I mean, so, you know, sort of the a la carte style. So I think those are just some of the things we'd like to see worked out. And I'll stop there and answer any questions that folks have.
Okay, thank you. Nick?
Richard Donovan on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. Just quickly, I want to kind of, Morgan said a lot of what I was going to say. In 2017, we did have Senate Bill 208. We were supportive of that bill. We were part of the work group that figured it out. Nobody seemed to be happy with the results of that work group. Maybe that means it's a good compromise. I'm not sure. But districts are implementing it, and it has gained traction. We're neutral here today, and the reason that I came up is to point out something that folks have kind of already alluded to or talked about, and Representative McClain mentioned. The phrasing in the bill is interscholastic, and interscholastic isn't defined in statute except for the bills that this committee passed, this legislature passed last session. So interscholastic, I'm not sure that using the word interscholastic would address this the problem that's mentioned in the article. I wanted to bring that before the committee today. We'd be happy to work on language to target that. I said last year, I'll say it again this year, these are public school students. They should be able to have access to public school activities, and we're supportive of that. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Rose?
I'm Ozzie Rose. I represent the Oregon School Activity Association for this moment. I was part of the discussion last time. As you've just been told, it was hard work and lots of nuances. I do think we have some work we can do. There are a couple things that need to pay attention to. One, interscholastic, when you start applying it to the elementary schools, it's battle for the books, an interscholastic activity. Anyway, so there are a lot of things that may or may not be. We needed to work through that and get better language. The funding sources, the charter schools are funded in one way, homeschools are funded in a different way, and then the class versus an activity needs to be more clearly defined as we try to apply it to the elementary and middle schools. Most of the focus last time was on high school athletics. That's what drove the discussion. And I'm not against the bill either. I think it needs a little bit of work so we don't have those kinds of questions when we come back here in 2019. We're gonna be busy with some other issues.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morgan, you were talking about students not picking the school. Maybe I'm missing something here. Page 1, lines 13 through 17, a school district may not deny a homeschool student or a student, current language, who attends a public charter school that does not provide interscholastic activities, the opportunity to participate in all interscholastic activities available in the school district within the attendance boundaries in which the homeschooled student or public charter school student resides if the student fulfills the following conditions. Doesn't that address what you brought up?
I think it, Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, I think it may. I think we'd just like it to be clear that, from our perspective, that it is the neighborhood school, that the attendance boundary of the school they live in, not the, I think it, this talks about, let's see here, which is, to participate in all, in the school district. It doesn't say school of residence. So it's just a little clarification. I was thinking, and that was where I was using my sports dad analogy, with the idea that you know, people get very persnickety when they feel like people are gaming the system for transfers for sports or trying to build super teams at the middle school level or things like that. Part of the issue, I think, also is in some school districts, there are some middle school sports, and in some places it's the YMCA or the Boys Club or Little League that run the sports, and just a little bit more clarification about that.
Follow up on that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a short session, and maybe I've been here enough years that I'm a little jaded.
But when somebody comes in and testifies to me, we just need to tweak the language a little bit, change a few words, and then we can get this right and we're on board. This is a short session. We have a deadline this week. What would be the language suggestions that you have that could be implemented immediately so this bill could be moved through the chamber by and meet deadlines?
Yeah, that's a good question, Representative Chair Springer. I think a few things from our perspective that we'd like to see in the bill is the clarification on the clarification, are we truly talking about extracurricular activities or interscholastic activities or classes? And our preference would be if we're going to, we'd like to make a distinction that we're talking about before and after school activities like sports. The definition that includes music, for example, you know, does that mean a music class or a choir class or a band class that's part of the school curriculum or the regular school program? If that's the case and that's the will of the legislature, all we're asking is we already have a process set up for homeschool kids where we fund that a certain way, and we should just do the same thing for charter school kids. That would be one example that we're looking for clarification on.
Okay. Representative Hernandez, then Representative Wisnett, then Representative McClain.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty. Question for COSA. I mean, I'm trying to find out the logic behind the neighborhood school, because aren't these folks who are either homeschooling or charter school, their parents are paying property taxes, income taxes?
Sure.
So shouldn't they have the freedom to choose?
Well, thank you for the question, Chair Daugherty and Representative Hernandez. The vast majority of school districts that I'm aware of, and I can think of, require the students to participate or attend school in their neighborhood school. They divide boundaries up. And then within that, they may have a transfer process, an intra-district transfer process, where you can attend a different school within your school district. Or they may have charter schools. They may have magnet schools. They may have specialized programs. But I think the thing we're thinking of, particularly around sports, is this idea that, let's say you're a larger district, even your district, Reynolds School District, which has multiple middle schools, for example. If a student lives in the attendance boundary for middle school A, is it the will of the legislature that they should be able to do sports at any of the middle schools in your district, or do they need to go to the middle school that they live in? And our perspective from our folks, especially our sports folks, is that you should go to the school you attend in, but that's obviously your policy choice.
All right.
And so I think, you know, the issue is, again, it just depends on the district, but most, from my, this is my anecdotal experience, most school districts require you to attend the school, your neighborhood school district, your attendance boundary, and there are some exceptions and processes that allow kids to go to different schools in the district.
Follow up. I just, right now, and because I've been on a school for the last 5 years, I can hear what parents would say, and my parents in my school district would say, I pay my taxes, I pay property taxes, I pay my income taxes that fund these schools. I should be able to choose. Anyway, I guess it is a policy question.
It is usually a board policy as to what the system is. Mr. Rose.
Madam Chair and Representative Hernandez, the athletic side of this is why OSA got involved. It's essentially, OSA was almost formed X number of years ago, a long time ago, to deal with the ability of folks to stack athletes in one place versus another and to try to keep even competition. I'm a very active Little League grandpa. I went to 6 basketball games Saturday. First one started at 8 and the last one ended at 8:30. These are kids playing on ball teams. Some are all from one school. Others are from pick and choose for a variety. Eugene has a really good team. All the kids are bigger than anybody else in this group, but they don't all come from one school. The issue is, how do you keep competition if it's going to be a school activity? And that's important to what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wisnett, then Representative McClain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morgan, is Ben going to have to wait a year and a half to join this group, or can he join it, is the choir now that is before school? So the issue of getting part of a FTE is not an issue that's before school, is that correct?
Representative Wisnett, to be honest, I'm not totally familiar with what happened in Beaverton, but what I would say
follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Chair Doherty, Representative Wilson. I think in the Beaverton case, and as I remember it, one of the challenges was that there was 90-some-odd students, mm-hmm. I think the article was that, 90-some-odd students who wanted to participate in this choir, and I think the choir had an enrollment cap of 30-ish students.
But that's not that the justification that the family was given. Did Mrs. Wheeler call CASA or OSBA or anyone to confirm what the intent was to clarify this? And a follow-on to that would be, why wasn't the intent asked of the people who were supporting the, I guess it's a committee bill, why weren't they asked what was the intent? You know, I've been screwed by bureaucracies on bills of mine where the rules didn't even represent what I wanted, and I was in the building and my name was the first name on the bill and they didn't even ask me. So why didn't the people drafting the bill ask the people that committee or whatever, what was your intent before the people drafted the bill to create this problem? The rules, excuse me.
I don't know if there's an answer to that at this moment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative McLean and Representative Springer.
I'm trying to figure out what the problem is, because every single thing that was brought up from this panel, I feel like we addressed in the last legislation, mm-hmm. Go around in 2017. There is money that will go from the charter school to the public school, to pay for this. And for homeschool, as you've already pointed out, we have a way to do that as well. So I don't see the money issue.
Okay.
On the class versus the after school or before school, most of these OSAA events have a class and an after school club or a after school team, and so they have both. And so again, there's money coming from the charter school for the kid that's going to join the activity. As far as the 90 kids, and there's only 30 on this little elementary choir, we said that they got to compete. The legislation didn't put them on it, but they got to compete. If there's only 7 people on the field, or there's only 22 people on the field, or there's only 30 people singing per night, they get to apply, they get to come, they get to try out. And so we didn't tell them they had to put 90 people on the field. You can't meet the rules for the actual competition. So I haven't heard a single new argument. I'm happy to pass something that is going to clarify a term if it's causing a problem, but I'm not quite sure what I see the problem is.
Well, and I think what I'd like to do is there is a problem of definitions. Through the discussion, there's two things I've seen. It's the question as to what is interscholastic has been one of the questions, and the second has been the issue of too many kids in a program. And also, thirdly, it's the definition of an after-school program versus something that is an after-school in a class, a speech team versus elementary choir that meets before school. So what I would like to suggest is that those seem to be the three questions. I think they're questions that can be answered fairly quickly, like in the next couple of days, and to see if we can go through and continue, going through with this bill with those clarifications, because I think what it is there's going to be the reality that what we intended to do, some of the school districts are not going to be able to comply. In other words, what do we do if we have too many kids? What do we do if it's somebody out of the neighborhood, area? And so I think those were the three things that I saw that were concerns that were brought up that were ones that could be dealt with in a very expeditious manner, as opposed to going through and having some problems with it. So anyway, Representative Pierce and Representative Springer.
Thanks. I just want to address the size issue. Like, we can't serve these kids, because if I was homeschooling my child and decided not to homeschool my child because I wanted him to get music, you'd have to accept my child. So this notion of size, to me, is a really artificial argument. I still don't love the underlying premise that we're charging these kids anyway, because they do pay taxes. They pay property taxes and income taxes. And if we don't want to serve them, maybe we should just give them their tax money back and let them do what they want with their state school fund for their child. But to come up here and use a size issue is an excuse. If that child was in the system, you'd have to serve him anyway. So please just take that out of your argument, because I just can't wrap my head around the fact that if they live in the neighborhood district and want to participate, and but for the fact they're in a charter or being homeschooled, you'd have to service and accommodate that child. And I think that is a false argument. And frankly, after a lot of years on this committee, I'm tired of hearing that particular argument. So I just want to get that on the record.
Okay, Representative Springer. Thank you,
Madam Chair. As I read this article that we're all referencing up here, and it talks about the public communications officer for the district said that it was a definition issue, and we've already talked about that. And then she says the Oak Hills Elementary before school choir does not fall under these provisions, and it is not an interscholastic activity, said Wheeler in an email. This, to me, are the two most important words in this entire document here, because what she's saying, but the real reason is what it says to me. In addition, so this is not just the definition issue. That was the one that rose to the top. In addition, about 90 Oak School Elementary students have returned permission forms to participate in the choir. School administration is concerned about managing the current Oak Hill student interest. They got too many kids, it sounds like, is their real issue. And they chose the definition. Madam Chair, with all due respect, I would love to see this bill passed. We're talking about working on better language for the 19th session. Let's pass it so Ben can do choir. We had to do this for the student that was the state golf champ down in Medford because she wasn't able to defend her title. I would love to see us pass this bill. Ben can do choir. That's a great thing about being in the legislature. We can make things like that happen. And then we come back, and if there's still issues, but I really think the real issue here is, in addition, there's too many kids.
Well, and I'm going to disagree with you, because I think what it is there needs to be a definition as to what we are using interscholastic for, and whether it's a rule system or whatever, we need to have that definition, because there's a different difference between the high school kids and the elementary students with this. And I think to make sure that we have a smoothness about administering this, that's the sort of definition that I would like to see, and make sure that we can come up with something. And so that's why I kind of narrowed it down into something that was doable in the next couple of days, to see if we can have it come back and get those, because I think it's sometimes hard to, it's a kind of conjecture as to what maybe is the situation in Beaverton as opposed to what the newspaper reports, kind of thing. So I want to get the issue resolved, and I think looking at those two things, they seem to be the most. So anyway, how about that? And we have a representative. We're going to have to maybe close this and reopen it, because we have another bill we have to deal with Representative Bynum. So do you have a question, or?
I just was going to clarify something.
Okay, please.
So, Madam Chair, I think when you were talking specifically about size, I know that when my boys were in different courses, drama and whatnot, there were certain spots available within that class and within that program. It wasn't about, so it was really specific to say there are 40 spots, but you had 90 kids that were interested. So you really only had the room for the 40 in the program. So I don't think this is anything, I think that's what you had mentioned, is that correct? That's what you were inferring to? Was that there was just so many spots?
Chair, Representative Solomon. Yeah, that's what I understand. Yes, that's what I understand. I've read the article. I'm not talking to Beaverton School District, but I understand that they had, I think this took place on a stage where they had a limited amount of space for this one choir before classes started in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so there were a number of kids that wanted to participate that they didn't have space for.
Okay, and then just to follow up is just to say, I was just curious, and I hear the concern well in this article and whatnot, but I was curious if they were able to go and appeal to their local school board.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Mr. Rose?
Very briefly, one of the problems that has brought this brought up is during the debate over 208, we focused almost totally on high school athletics and some of the nuances of how you treat the elementary situation weren't even given very much thought. And I would think that in 48 to 72 hours, the people from the charter schools and ourselves could build a better mousetrap.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, any other comments? Any other questions of the panel? Okay, thank you very much. Do we have anybody else who would like to speak on this House bill, 4036? Okay, with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4036 and open up a public session on, or open hearing on, is it 4047? Mm-hmm. On House Bill 4047. And if you want to explain it while Representative Bynum comes on up.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 4047 prevents education service districts from imposing additional high school diploma requirements on students enrolled in a youth corrections education program or program under the Juvenile Detention Education Program. It requires education service districts to accept any credits earned in another educational program in the state of Oregon. Revenue impact statement has been issued as no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact has minimal, and there are no subsequent referrals.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janelle Bynum, and I proudly represent House District 51, serving the communities of East Portland, Damascus, Gresham, Boring, Happy Valley, and North Clackamas. Last session, along with co-chief sponsor Vial, we brought you House Bill 3267, a zero-cost solution that eases unfair and burdensome requirements for high school graduation for our most vulnerable high school students in Oregon. As you may recall, it passed unanimously out of committee and both chambers. And so I'm extremely proud of that work, and I'm here today to testify in support of a follow-up bill, HB 4047, which fixes an oversight in 3267. So the details are, after the passage of 3267, stakeholders from the education service district community reached out to let us know that they were left out of the coverage that school districts received. So we thought including school districts was enough, but an education service district also has diploma awarding authority. So that's the reason the oversight occurred. So 4047 simply prohibits education service districts from imposing high school diploma requirements that are in addition to requirements established by state law for our vulnerable high mobility youth, as school districts are prohibited from imposing now. So the types of students that are included are military students, students of military families, migrant workers, students who have been incarcerated, students who are transient, homeless, or runaway. In closing, I want to thank the Oregon Youth Authority and other stakeholders for bringing this to my office's attention, and I'm excited to be able to remove barriers for on-time high school graduation for more of our students. HB 4047 is a simple, straightforward technical fix, and I want to thank you for allowing me to present today and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of a representative? Okay, thank you. So basically this is a cleanup from what we did to add, because we left the ESD out that
Correct.
Has programs, high school programs, in some of the corrections.
They have high school diploma granting authority.
Yes.
Yes, okay. As well as school districts.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Okay, next we have Richard Donovan and Ozzie Rose. Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Richard Donovan again on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, in strong support of the bill. We were happy to support 3267 last year. It was a good bill. This particular section of the population of students needs the kind of help the legislature can give, and getting rid of these requirements is a little thing that will make a big difference. Good bill to pass.
Ozzie Rose, the Oregon Education Service District Association, support the bill. It was an error last time. Excuse me, it was overlooked last time, and it should be fixed.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the gentleman? Okay, thank you very much. Okay. So we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4047 and take impact. Take about a 2-minute stand at ease. We are no longer at ease. Okay, what I would like to do is open up a work session on House Bill 4047. Representative Hernandez.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 4047 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 4047 to the floor, the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Evans.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative
Parrish. Don't wake up, man.
Representative Solomon.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Wisnett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and I will ask Representative Bynum and Representative Vial to carry the bill.
Okay.
Okay, so with that, I close the public the work session on House Bill 4047. Mm-hmm. And why don't we do that right at the very end?
Okay.
And we'll have Springer.
Springer. Yeah.
Okay. With that, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4051. If you could
summarize it up.
Summarize the bill.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 4051 establishes a task force on rural education and appoints 14 members to the task force. It requires the task force assess the impact of current state policy and laws on rural schools. The Dash 1 amendment requires one member on the task force to be a teacher specializing in special education and related services. A revenue impact statement has been issued as no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal impact statement that has been issued. This bill has a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you, whoever wants to be in charge up there. Good to recognize me.
You want to get this? There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Co-chairs and members of the committee, I'm Margaret Doherty, state representative from House District 35. And I want to give a little background to this bill. What it is as Ms. Miller said, is a task force which is actually has a very short time period. It would be done, finished, completed by the December 31st, 2018. And today, about one-fourth of all of our public school students in Oregon are located in rural communities. And with the combination of that, we serve nearly 50,000 students that are considered in the rural areas. While Oregon has worked to understand the disparities in education outcomes for a variety of student populations, there has been little focus to understand the barriers faced by Oregon's most rural schools and the impact that those barriers have. When I worked for the Oregon Education Association, I had quite a few rural school districts, and some of the things that face rural school districts are much different than facing the urban school districts. Is, for example, you may not have large class sizes, but you're also the only English teacher for junior high and high school, so you're teaching English K through or seventh grade through senior in high school, and so there are some differences. Recent research indicates that there are two substantial disparities not only among rural students when compared to their urban peers in Oregon, but additionally when comparing rural students to in Oregon to rural students across the country. There was a study put out called Why Rural Matters. The researchers compared an array of measures and outcomes among the rural students in the United States, and they reported that Oregon has the second highest rate of rural mobility in the country, which means our rural kids are moving more often than in other parts of the nation. Oregon has the third lowest graduation rate of rural schools in the country. Fewer than one in four juniors and seniors in Oregon in the rural school districts take the SAT or the ACT. And actually the second lowest rate in the nation. And Oregon has the fifth lowest ratio of instructional expenditures to transportation expenditures, which means they're spending much more money on transportation. But there's some other things that we don't really look at with rural schools. And for example, we know that rural school students are more likely than their non-rural peers to be chronically absent. And one of the things is we don't really realize the idea of, for example, if I'm a third grader and miss the bus and my school is 35 miles away, I'm not going to get to school that day. If I am in Eastern Oregon, and I've got braces, and my orthodontist is in Walla Walla, Washington, that it takes me 2.5 hours to get to Walla Walla. I have the dental appointment, and then I come back. And so these are the sort of things that we don't necessarily look at in the urban communities. Rural students are less likely to have access to college credit bearing courses because they have not set that sort of thing up. Oregon's rural students are less likely to enroll in post-secondary education. And then once in post-secondary institutions, rural students are less likely to persist to go into a second year of college. So those are compounded with some of the other things that we've looked at, especially the numbers of students that we have looking in the rural areas. I thought of the idea of a task force on rural education, and there is one amendment, and actually what the amendment is, and if you see in the bill, it has the different people that will be on the committee. We wanted to make sure that there was somebody from special ed, and so of the seven educators that were on there, one of those educators is a special ed teacher. And then also, and this is not in the bill, but one thing I would like to see when we do this task force is, first of all, the task force goes out to the communities where they are, and I would also like some students involved with giving them some input as to what they would like to see in the rural schools for us to improve. And so that's the basic idea of the rural schools task force. I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Representative Doherty. Any questions, Representative Parrish?
Thank you. Well, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I do have a question about the fiscal, mm-hmm. because a lot of times we have bills where we'd all like to have a bill that says minimal fiscal impact. And so mm-hmm. curious how this works when the fiscal impact says that it assumes that these entities will just reprioritize duties and existing resources. So if there is no fiscal because we're asking them to reprioritize it, why the subsequent referral down to Ways and Means, or do we think this will actually come back and get a fiscal slapped on it?
No, well, I think anything, even if it's a minimum fiscal, goes down to Ways and Means. But what it is with this, as we've gone through, and pretty much the people on this committee are going to be doing it for out of the goodness of their hearts, kind of thing. And so, but there's still things like mileage and so on that we're looking at, and so that's why it's going down to Ways and Means.
But I guess, can I follow up?
Follow up.
So, but when we're asking people that work in state agencies to just reprioritize duties so they can go to a task force, like, what doesn't get done because we're adding to their plate? That's what I'm sort of trying to wrap my head around. If we're not actually going to put dollars towards a task force, and we're just asking them to, I mean, we should just frankly have every task force look like this. So I'm just kind of curious about that, because I do worry that we're asking people to pick up duties and maybe that's not in there.
Well, and I think with part of that, Representative Parrish and committee members, is that to make sure whether it's the LPRO, whether it's that is helping with this, whether it's the Department of Ed, I'm not going to say it's standard language, but it's the idea to make sure that we do have somebody that, when all is said and done, a report will be written by people that know how to write the report. And so that's where we've got that kind of thing. And that's why when we talk to the Department of Ed, to keep the fiscal very minimal, because they do have people that work with this. And it was I think the most important thing was to get the ideas out and to get the recommendations to the legislature before 19 to see what we can do to possibly boost some of the issues that they have in rural
Thanks.
Communities.
And I appreciate that. I'm just my only concern is we're taking them off of other tasks that this body is tasked them with if we're not actually budgeting for people's time. So
okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you, Representative Hernandez.
Thank you, Vice Chair Wilson. Just two things. One thing that I've heard from teachers in rural areas, particularly teachers who teach ELL, is that there's additional issues when it comes to resources for either migrant students or students who speak multiple language. I think that might be a voice in this task force. Yeah.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, because it's not only that, but it's also to get not only resources, but to go through and get special training. If you're coming in from Harney County and have to go to even someplace like LeGrand, which you'd think was fairly close, it's quite a long trip. And so I think the idea of keeping aware in this task force that it's not only what we talked about, but also dealing with some of the issues that some of the other students may have.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important.
I think Representative Wisnett may have more knowledge on the ELL stuff, but
yeah. So.
I know that from what I've heard, it's a different issues compared to what urban schools mm-hmm. have to deal with.
Yeah.
And the second point and a follow-up, hopefully that this work will align with the Joint Student Success Committee that's touring around the state. I'm not sure if there's been conversation with the chairs of that joint committee.
Representative Hernandez and committee members, there hasn't been discussion about that because that other group is still kind of in the formation stage. But the information would definitely go to them. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, we're talking 50,000 of our students, so the information does need to be made very available to people.
And just a comment. I know that last year I looked into the percentage breakout in transportation funding for rural communities, and those rural communities that receive, I think, 90% reimbursement. And I was like, well, why not 100%? It makes no sense. What's the logic behind? And then I looked at the numbers to see what is 10% for those. It was less than $200,000 mm-hmm. For them not to have to worry about transportation costs. Well, hopefully that's something that is looked at as well.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hernandez. I appreciate that. Next up will be Representative Solman.
Thank you, Vice Chair Wilson. I also had the question flagged about the Joint Committee on Student Success. I think this mm-hmm. is an opportunity to really provide them some additional information. I had a comment and then a question. My comment is thank you very much for adding the additional person of having the special education lens to the table.
Well, actually, it's not an additional person, but there were seven people that were going to be on them, and one of the seven will be special ed.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. And then my last question is, I was curious if, I was reading through some of the testimony, and I was curious if there was some consideration of having someone from the classified staff, like an OSEA. I noticed there was some testimony in there, and I didn't know if that was an opportunity to have them also taking part in the task force.
Representative Solman, members of the committee. No, it's pretty much the breakout down that they had in the bill itself as to what the seven would be. So probably the answer is no.
Okay.
All right. Further questions for Representative Doherty? All right. Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next to testify will be Richard Donovan, please.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee. I should have sat up front. I didn't realize I was testifying on all the bills today. Richard Donovan, on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, in favor of the bill. The challenges teaching rural students and teaching rural districts have existed for a long time, but recently, and Representative Hernandez alluded to this, those challenges have been compounded by things like greater mobility, challenges facing migrant students, lower wages generally in rural areas. There are a bunch of factors that the legislature would do good to take a look at. And I mean, I know that I think it was during legislative days you had the Malheur ESD soup out talking about what it looks like, what his job looks like to go to some place like Juntura, and why is there a 90-minute drive? Oh, because you literally have to go around the other side of the canyon. And that's, I know that sitting here in Salem, folks understand that, but to actually dive deep into it will be a benefit to students and citizens of Oregon. So again, good bill to pass.
Okay, thank you.
Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Donovan.
Thank you.
Okay.
No one else will sign up to
you. Okay. He was the only other person that was signed up for it. We're going to stand at ease for a few minutes.
So close the public hearing.
We're going to close the public hearing and then stand at ease. We are no longer at ease. I'm a little fast with the doing that. Okay, since there were some questions brought up about whether we want to have somebody there from ELL and so on, we may have another amendment or two on this bill, so we'll hold off on it, but we'll go from there. Okay.
And so then you open the organizational meeting.
Okay, so we are going to reopen the organizational meeting. To give
Madam Chair, I ask unanimous consent so I could vote on the rules.
Okay, thank you very much. Rep Springer requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Springer to record her vote on the adoption of committee rules, and we can also do the same thing for Representative Parrish if she'd like to. Were you here to vote on it, or I can't remember?
But I voted on it. Do you want me to tell you now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Aye.
Is there any objection to Representative Springer doing this?
No.
Okay. There is no objection, Representative Springer.
Aye.
Okay. Representative Springer votes aye on the committee rules. Okay. So, with that, I close the organizational meeting. Anything else to deal with before now and Wednesday? Okay, thank you so very much. We'll get some answers for you, and we'll go through and deal with the rural education on Wednesday. With that, I adjourn.